final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there, telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn, and nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Every time we stop, hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. What a field day for the heat. 1,000 people in the street, singing songs and a carrying signs. Mostly say hooray for our side. It's time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop now. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going. You better stop.
Says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a gold dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see, my woman and the kids and the dogs and me. Got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too
many things these old boys can't do.
We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace and we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn.
We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. My grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway night, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause the country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. And we can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive.
Country folks can survive.
God's name is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office, and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Everybody, it's old Shazia's out here in my mad science laboratory. Hope y'all staying warm and doing fine. This is probably going to be a pretty rough winter for a lot of people, so I wanted to bring up the subject of heating and alternative methods of doing so. One of the things I want to do first is give a shout out to my buddy Desert Experimenter. If you haven't been over to his YouTube channel lately, I tried to post a link in Shazia's radio chat and WakeWet radio chat on the Super Chat HTML to his YouTube channel. He's been posting a lot of old declassified military videos on generating and electricity and such, and these are really good if you're interested in the basic concepts of how things are working out as far as generating electricity. And he's also posted several videos on electronics and how they work, and it's a pretty good amount of information if you're interested in circuitry or electricity or whatever. Just jump over there to Desert Experimenter on YouTube and check out the videos that he's posted here recently. Really good videos, and appreciate him putting those things out there for people. Anyway, you know, heating is probably the most overlooked as far as alternative energy, and it's probably one of the most important things in alternative energy as far as I'm concerned, because your heating bills are nine times out of ten going to be the most expense on your electric bill. And so I sat around and contemplated this for quite some time, what to do about it if a worst case scenario came down and you wasn't able to use the power grid, the normal power grid. There's a whole lot of different opportunities out there that you can use. You know, a lot of natural heating. You can use the sunlight even in the wintertime to get a little bit of heating and, you know, heat up some water or whatever. And then you also have the potential for, if you have wood-burning capabilities, to burn wood or, you know, waste oil, that kind of stuff. Depending on where you are in the world, might be regulations saying you can't do this or you can't do that. So that's probably going to be something you have to look into, whatever it is that you personally can and can't do in your own neighborhood, and maybe get with all of us in the mad scientist circle there, and maybe we can troubleshoot and help find you some ideas. One of the things that comes to mind on my side as far as ideas goes is when I was a kid, I remember they came out with this thing called an Easy Bake Oven. It was a pretty nifty little gizmo that the little girls had. They could actually bake cakes in this thing, and they actually did this using it was a piece of sheet metal inside of it. Hello, you're live. Hold on, please. You're killing me.
Good morning.
Alright, well,
morning.
Okay, anyway, we got Muddy and all them online. Back to the story there, before I got doomed into.
We'll be quiet, we'll be good.
Alright, thank you. Anyway, back when I was a kid, there was this thing that came out called an Easy Bake Oven, and somebody's got clanking going. Could you guys mute your mics, please, for a while, and thank you. Alright, there was this thing called an Easy Bake Oven that the kids had, and they could actually cook little small cakes inside these things. Had a little piece of sheet metal inside of it, and basically it cooked with a light bulb, one single light bulb. And so if you know anything about energy, light is energy, light is heat, and heat is light, vice versa. Essentially, there's a tungsten element inside them light bulbs that when the energy's going through there, electricity's going through there, that tungsten element vibrates, be a resistance or however you want to look at it, creates friction, which in turn creates heat, and which in turn creates light. And so, with that said, there's a way in which, if you put the wrong frequency to your electronics, you can literally cause it to burn up. You get it too high. You're not running it at 60 hertz or 50 hertz, whatever the case may be in your general vicinity. And so that's something that you don't want to happen normally. However, if you was in a worst case scenario and wanted to build you a generator, and if you paid attention to all of our old past shows and some of the old videos on YouTube about how to build generators using you know, magnets and fish tank air pump coils and so on and so forth, and Muddy makes a really good actual flex wind turbine that could be expanded on as well. But you can get a high enough frequency that's beyond what you need to run, you know, your normal appliance, which probably technically would not run your normal appliance. It would destroy it. But that extra higher frequency right there could be used, even though it's something that you normally don't want. You could use it to heat up a tungsten element. I've seen this in my lab on many occasions. I can light up light bulbs, but I can't run electric motors. There's not enough current going through these generators to run an electric motor. Otherwise, you could just take one electric motor and then hook it to a generator head and just run it direct, and then you would have your own electric generator. But there are methods by which you can do that, but not to the extent where you can run your whole house at this point. And so, with that said, light bulbs, 12-volt lighting systems, could be, in theory, used as a heating source. And like I said, it's not going to be a massive amount of heat, but it may be enough to keep you from freezing to death. And so that's something you might want to consider there. And as far as running your freezers and your house and stuff like that, I was looking at the deal and I was thinking, the biggest problem that we got is everything is run inefficiently. You know, we're actually using more electricity than we need to run our houses. And so what are ways that we could actually use less electricity to run the same amount of appliances and stuff? Well, if you look out into the world and you look at the guys out there, the youngsters that are making these really loud stereo systems, that they're just mind-bogglingly loud. They, you probably heard them going down the road once in a while. They got doom, doom, doom going on. They're sometimes seriously obnoxious because there's no rhythm. It's just a big old beat or whatever, and the trunk's rattling. Anyway, inside of those stereo systems here in the modern day, they have been putting some really amazing capacitors in there. I just yesterday purchased three 500K microfarad capacitors. That's 500,000 microfarads. And I was like, I didn't even know these even existed until I saw these on the shelves. And what would be the purpose of somebody having that many farads in one capacitor? I mean, to me, it would seem more dangerous than anything else, because an 800 microfarad capacitor will hurt you, and it'll hurt you bad. But these doggone things, they not only have a built-in voltmeter, they have an overload emergency switch on there with a buzzer. And these kids are using these 500K farad capacitors to supplement the energy in their vehicle so that their alternator and their battery isn't taking the entire load. So, to me, it says if you can supplement your energy, such as storing energy into capacitors and recapturing waste energy off of transformers and such, and use that to not necessarily run your entire house, but cut down the percentage of the energy that's coming into your house to run your house, then that's a step forward towards energy independence, as far as I'm concerned. There's so many different methods by which to do this. And heating, like I said, I think is probably the priority as far as alternative energy. If you get heating solved, you got the free energy world solved, period. It takes a lot more energy to heat using the current systems that we use than it does to run, just say, lighting and stuff, you know, and running your refrigerator and your freezers and stuff like that. But if it's cold outside, your refrigerator and your freezer, you can give them a break. They aren't going to have to use near the energy. You guys still there? Yeah, you can unmute your mic now.
That helps.
Yeah.
Did you hear what I was talking about?
Yeah, I like Easy Bake Ovens.
Well,
shorter chest.
You know, those Easy Bake Ovens, even though they seem to be like, you know, just a simple toy, they were really cooking cakes in there. And so think about this for a second. If you were in a worst case scenario and you couldn't run let's say a 220 oven or even a 120 electric stove, if you had access to a few light bulbs and some sheet metal, you could literally make a oven that would run off a whole lot less energy, a lot less current watts and amps, and be able to still cook food. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. Back when I was doing drywall and metal stud framing in Virginia, we took some of that thick foam that they use for insulation on the walls. You have to cut it and then squeeze it between the studs. Anyway, we took a whole 4x8 sheet and cut it down to get the biggest box we could, making the four sides and the two ends. And basically, aluminum foil duct taped it, and then we ran some extra long screws in through it, because this stuff was like an inch and a half thick, and it was light blue, really cool. Glad it wasn't pink. But anyway, I went ahead and fastened two light bulb sockets inside it, one at each end. And we stuck a 75 watt in there and a 50 watt bulb in there, and we plugged that thing in. Before long, the lid started warping, and we could smell it, so we had to undo the 75 watt. But the 50 watt bulb, just 50 watts, not 3200 watts like your oven and all that, just a 50 watt bulb, and all that good insulation. Everybody the next morning brought steaks and whatever they had to cook, burritos, breakfast burritos, whatever. And the new guy brought in a steak, all wrapped in a big old fat steak, and all wrapped in foil. And it was pretty big. We all ate steak that day. We put it out, we put it there in the morning as we started. By lunch break, he had to move it away from the light bulb and kind of flip it over in the foil and wrap it back again. And I tell you what, lunchtime, man, I tell you what, that thing was so juicy, fall apart in your mouth, and it was good. And we had taters and all that stuff. Yeah, so, 150-watt light bulb will cook.
So on the energy portion side of it, then it wouldn't be wrong for me to say that you could actually take away your regular oven and use light bulbs to actually cook with, right?
Right. I think it was like about 2 foot by 1.5 foot square from end to end, but over 2 foot long. And everybody put their food in there, and it cooked all of it.
Well, I would like to see somebody out there in the alternative energy world, and I'll try to do one myself, but I'd like to see somebody do a video of just what you're talking about. There's all kinds of different materials that you could actually build an oven, like maybe out of some sheet stainless or something like that, maybe even some just regular metal. I don't know necessarily how safe it would be to use like galvanized metal or something like that. You wouldn't want nothing falling into your food, so if you could get some sort of stainless box, that would probably, in my opinion, be a lot better than anything else. But
I've been really thinking about doing a video for over 2 years on this. We lined the inside with oil and just aluminum foil duct taped it all together, and because the foam is so insulative, just the heat just keeps collecting up, and if it gets too hot, the lid warps and let air out, and then it'll cool down and warp back down. So,
hey,
125 nice. Watts.
Yeah, go ahead.
Ain't much.
I actually have a halogen cooker.
Cool.
They sell them. They're dirt cheap. They've got a little fan in them. They run for an hour, and they cook meat excellent. They're dirt cheap to run, And now I will put crackling on your belly side of pork, so you know they make your meat nice and crispy and all the fat flakes off. They're wonderful. They're already out there. They're available.
Is there any halogen chance cookers that you could post links to that in the chat room? I mean, that's like the first time I know they got stoves that they call Sun Twin or whatever that use pretty much the same system. So I know they make heaters, infrared style heaters as well. But that's probably the first time I ever heard about a cook stove that was already out there.
With halogen?
Yeah.
Is that a 12-volt halogen?
10 to 15 watt bulbs. They vary in size. They're from 15-inch bowls to 12-inch bowls.
Well, I could make me a box, put a halogen bulb in there, and then hook it up to a solar panel, lay it on top to keep the lid down, right?
Yeah, and I'd like to expand on it a little bit further, because while I'm thinking about this, you know, you've got a lot of waste heat going on no matter what system you're using. But these, right now we've already talked about making it a little bit more efficient already by, if you run a 15-watt halogen bulb, and we all know those things, you don't want to touch them with your fingers because they get hot. And so with that said, what if you incorporated in the walls of the box, on the outer side of the walls of the box, you incorporated some copper tubing that you could circulate water through while you're using this oven? You could also heat water at the same time. What do you think?
Sounds great to have coffee ready all day, huh?
Well, I'm talking about when, as opposed to, you know, it's a search for free energy. In the meantime, we've already got methods by which we can make more efficient use of our energy. And so why not turn that oven into not just a cooker, but a heater as well? I mean, if you're going to be using the water for, you know, washing and stuff like that, and the entire system's going to be inside anyway, you're not going to have to worry about the water freezing, so you're not going to have any type of antifreeze inside the water that you're circulating through the tubing. And so with that said, you could not only heat your water for baths, but you could also heat your room with like a little radiator system. You know, while the water's circulating through there, you circulate it through a radiator, kind of like the old style heaters that were in all the old buildings. You know what I'm talking about?
Sorry, my phone went off. I can't hear you.
They do actually halogen lamps as well. They're heaters. They're twin halogen bulbs that range from 1 kilowatt to 2 kilowatts, depending on the combination of bulbs you put on. So there are heaters out there already. Halogen's caught on in a big way. I've just googled halogen cookers and hundreds have come up. I'm about to post a link in the chat rooms of a simple one. A very cheap.
This is why it's so awesome to have this show on there, because, you know, there's technology already available out there that for survival purposes that everybody should be looking into, you know. Some system such as this right here wouldn't take near as much to run as your normal heating system. And so with that said, a few solar panels, some battery backups, and some inverters, and, you know, you got an emergency system. What do you think?
I think it's great. I've never heard of a halogen cooker before.
Well, that's the first time I heard of it. I knew about the Easy Bake, and I knew halogens get hot, but I never knew that actually on the market that they actually had what he's talking about. And that's just awesome to me. And thanks for posting
this. Literally lots.
I mean, look, you can get a 12-volt.
I posted it in the chat room here. Can you post it onto all the other rooms? I can't get in rooms while I'm connected, guys.
That's all.
If you want to share that link.
All right, cool. Anyway, guys, the whole key is that, you know, here we are, 2014. I say we should be so much further advanced in in society than what we are, but we're not. And so with that said, you know, for worst case scenario, I'd like to see some, you know, alternative energy guys actually make some devices such as these, something to show people how, in a worst case scenario, you could actually take junk and make it work. You know what I'm saying? Man, radio silence.
We
busy pasting.
Chance it.
Yeah.
One thing that's always overlooked and is far more cheaper than relying on electricity is the sun. There is such a thing known as solar cookers. And basically, a solar cooker is just a metal box buried in sand with a reflective surface to shine the sunlight onto a glass top that seals up your metal box in the sand. You put all your food in the metal box, you put a glass lid on it so it's sealed, and you use the sun rays to cook your food. It'll bake bread in Antarctica temperatures, as long as there's sunlight. If you're in the winter months when there is no sun, you're dipped out cooking your food. But any sunlight period will bake your food, and it doesn't take long. You know, a couple of hours and you've got perfectly baked bread in a solar cooker. You know, it'll cook meat, it'll do all your food, and the total cost of that is nothing once you've actually built a solar cooker. There are different forms of solar cookers. You know, you can get pre-made ones with a parabolic mirror that reflects all the light in an intensified spot, and that not only boils your water, you know, you can boil food with the tin boxed solar cooker. You're just baking your food, not boiling it as such.
Yeah.
Whereas the parabolic mirror boils your food.
Let me pick your brain. That that halogen cooker. How many euro did he say that was?
That was a cheapie at £24. That's about $40.
That's not bad. It's not bad at all.
I recommend getting two though. You know, you can put an entire meal all in one cooker and do it, and it'll be done in an hour. Or you know, you obviously put in bits of additional food that doesn't take as long to cook. But if you've got two, you can make a big meal for a big family with two cookers, and keep them on the go. And they're easy to clean because there's only one bowl and a few accessories in there. You know, so
learned a little bit about the efficiency on the solar cookers too. A double pane of glass with just a little space between it keeps the heat from escaping due to surface temp of the glass, because that big surface area doesn't have to get hot to drain the heat. But if you got one glass over the other, it's an insulated layer with the air between it, and it like triples your heat just about. That and a black, if you put a black pot in there with something in it and then put the glass lid on it as well, it increases it even more, and it can actually get to boiling temperature.
So even in the alternative methods such as solar and stuff like that, there's even more ways to make even that more efficient. And so, you know, this is what I'm talking about. You know, heating is going to be a key, and especially this winter coming up, I'm telling you, it's going to be a nasty one. But, you know, either way, if people would at least get out there and look into these kind of things and try this ahead of time to find little simple methods by which they can do it, my brain is already ticking on so many different possibilities, such as, you know, using the thermoelectrics of this system to actually run the fan that would be circulating air out of this deal. Like, you know, the piezoelectric, not piezoelectric, the Peltier elements that come in Coleman coolers. If you heat one side and the other side's cooler, then you get electricity out of it. Vice versa. You can do this. They can either be used to make cold air, or they can use to be make heat. But you can actually use these to generate electricity with heat. And so, if you incorporate a couple of these things in, or maybe multiples of these things in the casing with the copper tubing, and had this all running off of lights, you could actually get some extra current out of that of the Peltier elements to run a fan. You see where I'm coming from?
Oh yeah, I used to turn my cooler off. I mean, I've had three of them. You plug them in the lighter, cigarette lighter, and go down the road. Basically, uses quite a bit. So therefore, it makes quite a bit when you basically unplug it and you look at it for a second, and it's one of them close encounter moments that you know, it's unplugged but it's still running, and you're wondering why the fan. You can hear the fan moving. You're looking down there and you feel the air going. You see, yeah, it's still running. That's because it's hot on one side and still cold on the other until it bleeds that heat off.
Well, see, there's proof positive right there that works, man.
And oh yeah, so it works.
If you was actually, I'm going to try to do one myself. I've already got a large project that I'm working on right now that I spent quite a substantial sum of money to work on. I've got parts coming in from so many different countries, it ain't funny. But anyway, I want to try to build a combination cook stove slash heater slash water heater slash electric generator using the thermals off of Peltier elements. And I think it would probably be, you know, reasonably expensive, but not so bad that it's out of touch to do so. And I think the biggest expense would be the Peltier elements, the copper tubing, and possibly the stainless, if I can get a hold of some stainless. But I want to build a stove that would run off of 110, which, if you have a solar panel out there and a battery bank, you can easily get 110 volts through an inverter and be able to run this thing in the worst possible conditions.
Or use a 12-volt bulb.
Well, there's an even more efficient way to do it, because they do have 12-volt halogens. And you know, even those little 12-volt regular incandescent bulbs, those things get hot as well, you know. And as if they're enclosed, like you're talking about in this oven, just the same way the Easy Bake Oven worked, you know, that's a lot of heat inside there. You see what I'm saying?
In the summertime, I run the CFLs. In the wintertime, I like to grab every bit of heat in the house I can. I take the hose off the back of the dryer, and I make a filter out of two t-shirts linked together, and tie the sleeves up and wrap it around the hose, and it collects all the dust and all the heat from that dryer goes into the house. Of course, once in a while you see a little steam on the windows or something, and then it turns to frost. But you know what? Why waste that heat putting all that heat outside?
Yeah. And there's one other one that you had talked about quite some time back about, well, maybe it wasn't that far back, but either way, you talked about compost piles and the black hoses that you can put underneath the compost pile, because when plants rot, they actually produce heat. And so with that said, during the wintertime, in those portions when you're not going to have as much sunlight because it's cloudy or whatever, you could still actually be getting heat even during the summertime if you had a pretty decent compost pile in some portion of your yard, and pipe that underground to your house or whatever, and circulate water through that through your floor. And since we all know that heat rises as that water's circulating through your floor, yeah, I mean, is it going to heat your house fully? No, I wouldn't say that, but it would bring the temperature up to where it's not as near as cold as what it was before. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. Matter of fact, that heat that comes out of there, if you're running that hose, you can run it to a radiator inside the house with a fan behind it, and it could be just a little 12-volt fan. I mean, you're going to get it 24/7. And that's for months and months. You can take as many showers as you want, one after another, but you do have to add some cold water. It's 160 degrees plus. Matter of fact, if you took a big bag, one of them oven bags that you could seal up all the way, and you just kind of dug into the side of that compost pile, you could put it inside that, you could put your turkey or whatever you got in that bag inside that compost pile and just leave it there for, you know, leave it there for the whole doggone day and pull it out the next day, and I'm sure that sucker's going to be juicy and ready to fall off the bone.
Well, and throw in some Peltier elements in there again with that system that you're talking about heating the water like that. You could also use the disadvantage, what you would have as the cold, and the advantage, what you would have as the circulating water for the heat, to actually generate enough to run a small fan for circulation.
That's right. That's a lot of energy in that compost. A lot of people don't realize.
Well, and if you was to, during the summertime, you know, like, what do people do with their leaves? They basically rake them up, throw them in trash, or burn them off, you know. Nobody thinks about maybe shoving them into a compost heap or something like that. And so there you go, you know.
I get plenty of it. I get plenty of it. I mean, I mow lawns. Some people got these irrigation septic systems. And basically, I mean, they have to water their lawn. So that lawn grows and it makes me money. So I go by their lot. And basically, if you don't bag it once in a while, or run your mower in a crop circle, blowing it all to the middle till you got somewhat of a pile, and you can go over there with a rake and slam, you know, four big slams, just slamming it, you know, use the rake as a big hand, just slam it into the bag with three strokes, stand that bag up, tie it, go grab another one, go to your next little circle pile, and then just run over it and blow the rest around. I'll come out of one lawn with 4 to 5 bags, big garbage bags full, and I throw that on the compost pile. I've basically had the trailer loaded up with grass to where it's basically in the way. So you you try to do those lawns at the end of the day. That way you can pile them up and you don't have to sit there and take them off to get your mowers off. Then you come back, you pile them on there, and I had a huge compost pile. And it didn't take, just wait till next year. And I tell you what, man, you come down there, there's a lot of good soil. Now you're ready to grow some food, too. So, I mean, the energy, all the nutrients and chemical storage, it helps your plants grow. It does everything. You can make a warm bed by spreading it out in your greenhouse on the floor and then put a bunch of straw on top of it. And then build your, you know, put your plants up above all that, and it'll keep them warm where you don't have to have a heater.
Well, one thing to factor in there, and I know this for a fact, and the reason why I know all this works as far as the compost and heat and stuff with it, is that straw and hay and stuff like that will literally spontaneously combust. If it gets wet at any time,
right,
it will start to rot, and the bottom bale can literally catch fire. And it happened here not too far from me, right up the street there at the sale barn, where they have huge buildings full of straw and hay. And what happened was that they had sprung a leak somewhere in the roof, and it got some the bottom bales wet. Well, it started a fire. It literally, that took about 3 days and trucks from several different counties to come in there and try to get that out. And they never did fully get it out. And that's a massive amount of energy potential. And it's seriously dangerous, you know. So if you're thinking about making a compost a heater system, I would say try to make sure that whenever you do this, you make it maybe in a steel fenced-in area, to where, you know, if it did spontaneously combust, it's not going to, you know, burn down your house or your neighbor's house or stuff like that. But where you can contain it, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, the science of it is basically straw is hollow, hay is hollow. Then insulation means it's bulk, but it doesn't have much mass. It means there's lots of air in there. And those layers and pockets of air basically is what makes it very thermal, kind of like styrofoam. It's all the air in it that makes it so thermal. So you've got tons. You got bales on the bottom. You got bales stacked up, and all that pressure is keeping the heat from escaping. And it's thermal, so just a little bit of heat and it keeps building. And just like when you cook your food, it starts to get soft. It works on the compost as well. It makes that compost start speeding up and biodegrading. And it doesn't really take but a day or two. Just get it wet, and that's when you gotta start watching. You really don't want to build it at any. You want to get the wet hay away from the dry hay.
Yep.
And just get it out of there. Or, yeah, it will burn your barns down big time.
Well,
and that's a lot of heat.
And so I was thinking, as a safety precaution as well, if underneath the actual compost pile, as opposed to maybe having a rubber hose, or even if you had a rubber hose, finding a way that you could insulate it away from any flames or anything like that, so you're not setting fire to the hose, which will follow maybe down and burn your house down kind of stuff. But start off with a copper tubing underneath your compost pile, and then go work your way into rubber when you're in the clear, if you understand what I'm trying to say here.
Right.
So that if you did have a fire in your compost heap, it wouldn't work its way back towards the house. So, you know, always exercise caution when you're working with any kind of alternative energies whatsoever, because, you know, there are things that can happen. You know, I've seen fires because of bales of hay getting wet, and they do rot, and
the hotter they get, the faster they rot.
Yeah,
and the heat goes up into the dry stuff. It's not the wet stuff that catches fire. The heat's from the wet stuff, but it's so insulated it just keeps collecting the heat, and it gets up to the dry stuff. The good stuff burns. The bad stuff stays there, and you got a mess to clean up with a bunch of char. It's all wet and soggy.
But see here, we have pointed out so far a lot of things that you don't want to happen that you can control while they're happening to actually taking that energy. You know, anytime you burn wood, you know, you don't normally don't want a fire, but you build a fire in a controlled fashion, and you can actually use that energy. Well, the same thing, I think, could be applied in the electricity world. There's certain things that happen in electricity that you don't want to happen, because normally, you know, like when I talk about the 60 hertz and the 50 hertz electric motors, you know, anything above 60 or 50 hertz is going to heat up that motor and destroy it. And so, you're obviously not going to want to run this through your electric motors, but what if you took a high-frequency, high-voltage generator that normally wouldn't have enough current to run, you know, any kind of electrical motor without the potential of destroying it, however, using that to run the light bulbs? Because I know for a fact that you can run light bulbs with this type of energy that wouldn't run your normal electric motors. You see what I'm talking about?
Right.
Because it's still vibrating that tungsten element inside there. It's still creating enough heat, which in turn is the light. And I've seen some pretty decent lights be lit up by voltage that would normally not run any other electrical appliance, because it takes too many currents, watts, and amps to do so. So,
right.
In a worst case scenario, you can build a generator out of junk, things that you can scavenge out of microwave ovens, the copper wire that you can get out of there, the cores that you get out of there. There are electric motors out there all over the place that there's permanent magnet motors that you can use that, if you spin them right, you can get a lot of voltage out of them. And those, they call them smart drive or direct drive motors out of the washing machines and the dryers. Those put a lot of high voltage out of them. I've watched that guy with the 5-horse Briggs and Stratton throw some heavy duty arcs out there that I believe would kill you.
Yeah, don't forget the X13s. The AC controlled three-phase motors, basically they got a module in the back that sits there and turns the It basically takes the AC that's coming out of your wall or from your grid, and it remanufactures that AC into a low frequency until the motor starts going, and the motor starts it starts raising the frequency and raising the frequency and the power on the motor, so the motors don't just slam on, which is real rough on them. They they're permanent magnet motors, so they're very efficient. The cool thing is you take the module off the back and you got three phase AC when those magnets pass the coil, so now you have a generator. The X13s, they throw these things out because the FETs blow, and you can't really repair the circuits because they're basically covered with a little bit of epoxy that keeps you from being able to unsolder parts and put another part back in.
Well, I would like to get a hold of a few of those things and do some tests on them, but like I said, maybe it's not going to run your freezer, or maybe it's not going to run your washer and dryer and stuff like that, but it will definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, run your lights,
And probably run your fridge, too. These things that use big watts don't use the big watts continuously. So you got time to store it up into the battery, and just like the heat building up inside the hay, it gets warmer and warmer and warmer. If you don't take it away, it'll get to a real high temp. The same thing with the batteries. You can just keep on putting amps into the battery. After a while, you've got a few hundred amp hours on that battery.
Well, that's the key right there. If you, the larger your battery bank, the more time you're going to have. So if you have access to even old junky batteries that won't take a full charge, there's still storage capacity in a battery that only take 5-volt charge, and it's supposed to be a 12-volt charge. You can still store energy potential in that. ain't no joke. I got batteries over at my house, and I take the lowest voltage and put it furthest away, and I take the best voltage and put it closest to the load. And I store energy even in the batteries that are total junk that wouldn't even run probably electric motor by itself. It works.
Hey, guys, I got a question concerning the composting heating ideas. If what I'm going to do is just give a scenario. If I have a 3-bedroom house with 6 rooms in it, okay, and I have a water tank, etc., how much compost would I need to actually keep it going? How long does the heating reaction take before I have to renew all my compost?
Let's put it this way: they did it. They did a pile about the size of the average, 8x8 shed. And it sat up there probably about rib cage level in the middle there, and they had the hose up under it, and they had the water coming from the stream. It would come up to the holding tank because the stream was higher at one point, and they piped it from there. It would just come down, fill the cistern until it got to a certain level. That's all because of where they tapped the stream, so it wouldn't overflow and it wouldn't be under. And basically, they took shower. There was 13 of them there at the camp, and they all took showers one after another, and nobody ever complained about cold water. It lasts for about 3 months, 4 months. It starts getting down below 160 degrees, which you still need to put cold water to, so you don't burn yourself. And basically, all they have to do is just turn the pile, churn it up, add some coffee, go down to Starbucks coffee and bring them a trash bag and a can to put it in, and tell them, fill her up with coffee grounds. So they'll fill it up before half the day's over, and they're happy to get rid of it because they have to pay to get rid of the coffee grounds. So you take it home, you got a million-dollar thing sitting there right in your bucket. If you can get it up on your truck, because it's going to be very heavy. You get it up on your truck and get it home, it revitalizes the whole doggone pile, and you're back up to 160, 170 degrees all over again for a few more months. Just turn the pile.
Right, okay, so it isn't a case of calling it a dead battery and starting again, all you're doing is you're adding more nutrients to reactivate.
If that pile is still as high as it was, it's still got the same amount of energy. But what you're going to notice after like 3 months is basically it's going to be around waist high. You just pile more up on it and start turning it and turning it. Throw some more straw, throw some more coffee grounds in there. You can buy nematodes. And that's just basically bacteria and stuff that sit there that start the composting. It's the actual cultures that break everything down.
Right. So instead of using water from a cold stream, how does this sound? Using a standard household central heating water tank in your compost, so your compost surrounds that to heat the water rather than having a heating element inside the tank.
That's a good idea.
You've got a closed unit for pumped around your radiators.
That's a good idea.
People think they need to have their water at boiling temperature just below, or sometimes the people like to have it almost above it. I mean, but it's kind of stupid because basically it's wanting to expand. Well, okay, well, we got 45 pounds of pressure on our water, so it's not going to boil. Yeah, but you don't need it that hot. If it burns you and you can't wash dishes with it, then it's a little too hot. I got mine down. I got my hot water heater down there at 100. I basically got it between medium and low, just kind of in between there. And the cool thing is, if you got your compost circulating with your hot water heater, it's a closed system, and basically you just put a small pump on it, your hot water heater will never turn on. You can leave it connected to the grid or whatever, but it will never turn on. Therefore, you don't have to, let's put it this way, when you go from mechanical to electrical, you lose in about 50%. When you go electrical to mechanical, you lose in about 50%. There's some motors that are up at around 90%, but most motors are 45% or so. So the same thing, when you change from one form of energy to another form of energy, there are losses. Your solar panels are getting like 5%. Well, probably better than that. A Stirling engine is running right at about 45-50%. Your gasoline engines in your car, you're taking that fuel and you're burning it and it's exploding. And that energy that winds up in the cylinder is pushing that piston and all that friction. Only 5% of it actually makes it to your rear wheels. So, yeah, every time you change, but see, this is heating up. This water's already hot. You're not using electricity to heat it up. It's very efficient. You're not going to run out of hot water.
Right. Well, here you go. How about putting a... I assume the... forgive me, I'm not so technically minded. Is that Stirling engine a kind of low-pressure steam engine?
It doesn't... water expands 1,800 times when it goes to steam, especially if you heat it up enough. But a Stirling engine
was
worked out. Your air is your fluid. Your air.
What are you getting at?
It spans to 28 pounds total between the vacuum and the pressure, unless you have the whole thing pressurized where you have more air to work with. Or you can go to helium, which is non-flammable, and it really expands because it's the second smallest molecule. It expands and contracts.
Can I interrupt you there, Muddy? What I'm getting at is, could you actually use the compost energy to boil your water, or, well, to heat your water to run a Stirling engine to generate your electricity?
Well, the Stirling engine itself doesn't take water. That's expansion and contraction of air. And so
what I'm getting at is, are there steam engines that will accept water from the heated water from the compost? Is what I'm getting
at. Yes, you can. You can take the you can take the water that's flowing from the compost and insulate your lines all the way up to it. Run you a coil of copper tubing right on the hot plate and insulate it afterwards so the heat doesn't escape from the hot plate. And that it'll keep one end hot. Some Stirling engines run with a 20 degree difference in Fahrenheit, and some run with just the heat of your hand. It depends on how much power, but the power between the hot and the cold and the surface area and how much is changing is how fast you can introduce heat and get rid of the heat on the cold side. That's where your power is all located at. And you're going to get 45% of what the thermal energy says you have in difference.
Right. You see, I really like this idea. If you can get heat from compost, then from that heat you can convert into electricity. So not only are you heating your house, you're getting electricity for your house just by composting. So, that's the wonderful idea. That's how to go green, isn't it?
Yeah.
And almost coffee by the tap.
And it's something that you're using what would have normally been waste to do just exactly what you need to do. And so with that said, all of these ideas right now are awesome ideas, and we should expand on them. I'm going to do a few things that if you decide to do one of those light bulb videos, let me know. I'm going to try to do one too and see if I can make the most efficient stove. I'm going to study up that link that he did, the ones that's actually already on the market, and see how those things work and see if I can't create a better, more efficient version of it using what I'd like to just call dirty electricity, because it's not going to run your refrigerator or your electric motors or anything, but it will run the elements in light bulbs. And so you could make a really crummy generator out of junk that would produce enough energy to cook your food and actually give you some heat and some hot water at the same time. I think that would be a really good step forward in the alternative energy community. What do you think?
I think it darn sure worked. Down at the shop, when I go down there, I want to stay down there all day. And that means I got to cook. I've got solar panels. And basically, YouTube blessed me a little bit this month. Gave me about a third more than I got last month, which last month wasn't all that great. But that means I can go out and afford to run down there and grab me one of them sheets of foam. And I'm planning on making a cooker. If I can just lay a solar panel out there and put food in there and just let it sit for a while, I don't have to watch it. I don't have to do nothing. Maybe turn the solar panel every now and then when I notice it's not directly at the sun. And when I can smell the food, you know it's cooked.
Do you know if they have any premix mortars, such as what you would use to repair maybe fire brick inside of an oven that you could actually use as insulation? You put your copper tubing on your metal sheeting for your box, and then make a wall that you can actually pour in some premix like heat box type of material?
Yeah, you can pour stuff in there. You can pour, you can take, I don't know why I always get stumped on this word. Portland. I got it. And it took less than a minute. Portland and some vermiculite. Or you can make papercrete. That's where you take probably about 40 pounds of newspaper and about 9 pounds of Portland, and you got to really shred that paper up into small. What they normally do is they take the rear end for a pickup truck or one of them pickup bed trailers that still have the original axle under it. They turn the axle to where it faces up, put a bar on that that goes up to a large lawnmower blade, and they put one of them round watering troughs on there in place of the pickup bed, or on the bed of the pickup, and they put all the paper in there, some water, and the Sackcrete or Portland, and they drive about 3 to 4 miles an hour around the block, and when they come back, it's all chopped up, mixed wonderful. Then they just start pouring. They got boards on the ground. You lay some plywood out, and you drive right over the plywood. But in the middle, you have two boards spaced out right at about 10 10 to 12 inches, and basically you start pouring, and as they pour, you start inserting boards every so few, like 8 inches, you stick another board in there, and you smooth it all over. These boards are on their side, not on the flat, but on their sides. So you got the perfect shape of a brick. You let them sit there and dry for a day. And then you basically after 3 hours you can move them. And after you let them dry for a day, it's time to start building. Let them dry out for about 2 or 3 more days, or add some heat to them and heat them up slow, and it gets all the moisture out, and what's left where the paper was and everything is basically thermal pockets of air. And they're very thermal. Papercrete, you can put your, if you got a wall of it in the sun and paint the outside of it black, you can put your hand on it, and it'll get real hot to where your hand might blister up, but on the inside it's cool. So very, very thermal. You can make that real cheap. Just go down to your newspaper place. Every town's got a newspaper, and just say, hey, I need a couple bundles, and go get probably about 5 bundles and 1 9-pound sack of Portland. And you can make that. Or you just go down to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever building place you got there, and go get you some vermiculite and mix that with it.
Cool. That's some good ideas. Let's say we take a quick music break. Can you add Thomas into the call?
Oh, yes, indeed. Definitely.
All right. I'll be back in a bit, folks. You're listening to Mad Science. We're going to take a quick music break.
Turn it up. I'm
space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Shazia's Mad Science. We've been joined by Thomas as well. And so with that said, we've been talking about heating and alternative methods of heating. And actually, between the three of us so far, we've already built a really good self-sustaining system using compost and other things that we already know exist. And so, you know, with that said, let's get back into it. Where were we, Muddy? He done got his microphone shut off.
Yeah, I had to. The doggy was bugging me to get eaten, get food and all that stuff. Basically, yeah, we were talking about heating up Stirling engines and getting the electricity out of Stirling engines and stuff. We can't make steam with it because it doesn't get to 212 and above, but 160 to 170 degrees is not bad. It's darn sure run a Stirling engine.
But actually, I think you could make steam with it if you was doing a little bit of trickery going on there. You know, water will boil in a vacuum.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you were able to take this Stirling engine and create enough torque to, because the Stirling engine is working off of it expanding and contracting hot and cold air. And if you was able to make enough torque to actually create a vacuum that you could actually put your water into to turn it into steam with a release valve at a certain point in time, don't you think you couldn't make enough steam to run a small steam engine?
It's got to hit 212 degrees, though. Before the water will turn to steam. Now it will evaporate, it'll be a little faster, and it will expand. But
I'm saying you could get it to the boiling point there is what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah, if you put it under a vacuum, but once it goes to boiling, it expands, and you've lost your vacuum.
Yeah.
So you're spending all your energy trying to get a vacuum back on.
So you got a pressure valve going on inside there that instantly releases it out into maybe, say, a pressure tank, and then you're back to vacuum again.
Right.
And when the pressure tank finally gets pressurized enough, you know, keeping that pressure tank warm underneath, say, the compost pile next to the pile that has the actual water tank itself, then it will keep that from flashing back into water long enough for you to pressurize it.
I think Thomas and Boomer were talking a few weeks ago about using a different fluid, like acetone and a few others. What was the outcome on that, Thomas?
Well, I don't think it was me that was talking about that.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Boomer. So.
Well, we got to try to keep it in the realm of things that people already have access to. I was at the phone company just yesterday, and I seen how they were actually using to repair cell phones. They actually built a device that they got patented that you put your cell phone in there, and it puts it in a vacuum, and it takes the moisture out of that circuitry, and it's really impressive. And, you know, a simple concept, but it's doing the same exact thing. Now, whether that would be efficient enough to actually give you enough temperature to flash water into steam and then so on and so forth, But there are other options as well. You know, on top of your compost pile or whatever, if you got the Fresnel lenses heating up another portion of the water tank or something. You see what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, that could work. Use a little bit of combination with solar. Not a problem. You can even evacuated tubes. For those that don't know what an evacuated tube is you got a dark glass tube or a metal tube sitting inside a clear glass tube with a vacuum between it, kind of like a thermos does. But the fact that it's clear outside, you can set a liter of water in that tube, basically, and set it outside, leave the cap off it. Within about 10-15 minutes, that water has reached boiling point because it's so thermal. You can boil water that way and get steam.
Well, and there's all kinds of different methods and materials that could be used to, you know, speed up or supplement the heat that it takes to actually get it to turn to steam. You know, such as catalytic converters. You know, once you get those puppies hot, you know, they stay hot for a long period of time. And so, if you've incorporated some of the materials, such as in the catalytic converter, into this system, and you got that thing hot enough, you could literally, like we said before, compost, hay, or straw will literally spontaneously combust. It will literally catch itself on fire. Now, there's a lot of heat involved there. And so, if you could capture that heat and disperse that heat before, you know, it actually caught fire, you know, you could heat up a catalytic converter, and whatever you run through the inside of that catalytic converter, whether it be air or water, and it's going to get hot.
Yeah, in the case of straw and hay there, I guess if you put it right above what's wet and it's insulated with all that, I imagine it'll actually get up to that temperature for the where it wants to spontaneously combust.
I see a whole lot of potential in this system, and I see this particular idea of being something that the average Joe could scrounge up junk to do it, but it takes a little bit of prior knowledge and a little research in order to do it ahead of time, worst case scenario, power grid goes down. But the compost idea, the reason why I like it is because it'll even work in the winter time, even in the coldest portion of winter. You'll still have heat up underneath that doggone compost pile while that stuff is rotten, and especially if you put it in a closed steel fence or something like that to keep it, you know, contained or whatever, you know, away from the elements, so that you're not got 10 feet of snow on top of it or whatever. But
I'll have to do some research that if you insulate it, and I think the compost still needs air. It needs to be aerated a little bit.
Well, you could always put breather vents towards the bottom of it to where you could still get air into it, but you're not allowing any, like rain or stuff to blow up inside there.
Well, my idea was to let it keep building in heat, but don't let it get any oxygen.
Yeah.
You'll probably turn it all into char. But the heat will definitely be there.
Either way, it would be some really good informative videos if we could do some at least some small version styles of these, and try to add as many possibilities as possible, such as when we were talking about cooking using lights and like the Easy Bake Oven. You know, it's a simple concept, but it really works. And if you was to incorporate not just that concept, but actual, tubing on the sides of the walls there and insulated that so that you're circulating, water through there and you're capturing the waste heat off of that, plus using not piezoelectrics, I keep saying piezoelectrics, but I mean the Peltier element, using the Peltier element to use the differential of the cool air on the outside and the heat coming from the wall and the tubing on the inside, that you can generate enough electricity to run a small fan for circulation and possibly a small water pump to actually circulate the water as well. What do you think?
All solar.
Yeah.
The heat pools that way, or hot tubs. It just takes a lot of solar, but you know what? They can heat it. They heat the. You can heat a hot tub with wood. Heck, you heated up you heated up your hot tub with a coffee burner element.
Yeah, coffee pot element, little 110 element, and I actually expanded on that and took some copper tubing and made a coil that sat on top of the hot plate section of it. And I'm going to also take the coil section and encase it in some sheet metal and then put some insulation material inside there as well. But with that said, you know, 110 volts, I got essentially a water heater. And, you know, this is what I'm talking about, bringing it down to, you know, the most efficient manner in which to use it. Are you guys still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Just had company knock the door. Had to mute my mic. You can also make air conditioning. Use gravity as your power for cooling. If you can get a small pump and a real tall pipe, and you slowly pump the water up there to the top, and you put a small orifice down at the bottom, it's going to spray. Now, what it does is under all of that pressure. The water gets under pressure, and the deal is it's got a lot more heat. But basically, that's all bled off from the surface area of the pipe by the time it gets down there. And it comes out that orifice, now the pressure's let off, and that gets pretty cold. Boomer's brother used to work on a crane, and it got hot up there, and that crane didn't have any AC, but it had pneumatics and hydraulics, and he used the pneumatics, which is air instead of water. He used the air pressure. He fixed a small nozzle right up behind the back of his head, and it would sit there and just let the air out, and it was cold air. And every now and then it would sit there, he'd feel something hit him in the back of the head, and it was a pellet of ice that built up on the end of it.
Well, you know, there's another potential that you just mentioned right there. Is pneumatics, you know. These air tools that you see, they're amazing pieces of machinery, and actually they're not as high tech as you would think they are. It's a simple process to take air and turn it and actually turn them into enough torque to, you know, loosen up lug nuts on your doggone car, and that takes a lot of power. If you've ever tried to use a tire tool to take one off, you know what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah,
these
things get cold too. I used to operate a pneumatic drill all day, and man, I mean, you had to wear gloves, not because it got hot, but because it got cold, and your knuckles would start hurting.
Yeah, well, these pneumatic engines are another idea for actually generating electricity, because you can get some serious high RPMs off of some of these things. You know, they use them for like Dremel style cutters or whatever, you know, and they got some little tiny pneumatic engines that are pretty doggone fast. And so if you're once again either using a windmill to pump air, or a Stirling engine to pump air,
or turn a compressor,
yeah, even that, turn a compressor, fill up a tank, and run even if it's only in short bursts to supplement the energy that you're using. You know, every energy that you put inside that battery bank or capacitor bank, however you want to go with it, is...
Guys, Tesla used a little air compressor to make high-frequency electricity. And all it was basically a little flapper that would run an iron rod round in between two electrical coils to get high frequency electricity generated. So, you know, compressed air is has been around for a long time. It's just not utilized in a way that is used for generating electricity. It's used from converting the power of compressed air into another form of power device, as you say, with torque drills and spray guns, etc., you know. But you know, it can be used to generate electricity if you so desire it.
Yeah, we've touched on many different subjects so far.
I want more info than that last one.
That by them, by themselves may not be sufficient, but like I say, supplementing it with all these different systems in conjunction with each other, I'm already seeing a self-contained system that you could build. You know, and when you talk about electricity and energy potential and stuff like that, you can't underestimate static energy as well, because I don't know if you've ever been had the pleasure of your brother rubbing his feet on the carpet and sticking his finger on your ear and shocking the crud out of you, but there's a lot of energy potential in that little arc that's coming across there. And so that takes you up into the Van de Graaff generator or the Wimshurst generator. Wimshurst, in my opinion, would be the best because it doesn't have the problem that you have with a normal generator head, such as the back EMF, because it's working off a static, you know, basically rubbing across brushes or whatever. Either way, that energy can be changed into usable current, you know, by zapping it into capacitor banks. And so, taking in consideration everything that we talked about, if you had a windmill with a Wimshurst on it, and you had a compost heap that was heating your water and generating a little bit of electricity, plus you were using solar power to heat up tubing or whatever, and the Stirling engine to run a pump. You know, there are so many different deals that if you put these together, it wouldn't matter whether the sun was out or the wind was blowing. One way or another, nature's throwing energy at you all day long. Does anybody disagree with that?
Oh, it's free. It's out there.
I totally agree with you, Chance. Sorry to interject. Muddy was inquiring about the compressed air with... or what Tesla was doing with compressed air. Can you imagine the mechanism of the doorbell? You know, the ding-dong type doorbell.
Right.
It's got two coils and a metal rod in between that swings left and right.
Yeah, solenoid with ferrous bar in the middle.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if you can imagine putting a little pivot in the center of that bar, and that pivot is connected to a little flapper that runs back and forth as compressed air is run through it. So that little flapper is moving the iron rod in between the coils, and those coils will now turn into little generators.
Cool.
So instead of applying electricity, you're getting them to generate the electricity just by moving that.
Kind of like the shaky flashlights, I get it, and that's using the air compressor to...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Well, see,
okay.
There's another incredible, simple idea right there. I'm telling you, all the answers have been there all along. We got every single piece of the puzzle. Now, getting together with a brilliant team and putting all these things in conjunction with each other to make it totally self-contained is just as simple as getting up and doing it, as far as I'm concerned. What do you think?
I totally agree. Many minds make great ideas, I guess.
Well, we've already built a totally self-contained system. I mean, we're using the waste heat. We're not wasting anything, as far as I'm concerned, because if you already got trash, which is the compost that you're just going to throw away anyway, and your neighbors are trying to get rid of theirs as well, tell them bring it over and dump it in the pile. You know, now you got some free fuel going on there. And as far as water, if you're not going to be drinking the water, you can still boil it, and then eventually you probably purify it enough to drink it anyway. So you really don't have to worry about, you know, anything in the rainwater. You can collect rainwater to basically use that water to circulate into your system. So there's another portion of the deal. You got sunlight most of the time, and you got wind. You got so many different things that are going on in nature. And using everything in your general vicinity, what nature already does, and things that were normally aggravating to you are now using towards your benefit, this is what I'm talking about. You see what I mean?
Well, on that idea, just imagine how many Lord Mole companies, you can put out of business because you've no longer got to pay for your electricity bill. So that's a saving. You can undercut other landscape gardeners in your area with. Yeah. I'll mow your lawn for half this price because all I want is your grass.
Yeah. They'd be like thinking you're crazy. He mowed my lawn for the for my grass. They're gonna love you.
And you collect your grass for heating your house.
But little did they know, all that grass you collected out of your doggone yard's gonna run your doggone system for 3 to 3 months at the very least. So you just got 3 months worth of fuel for a few hours worth of work.
Hot water.
Exactly.
That's brilliant.
Hot water and heat out of a radiator.
Yep. Oh. And all day long, I don't care what country you're in, all day long, people are wasting things 24/7, man. There's so much waste in this world, it's just crazy. You know, if I see something that can be used, such as, you know, I took an air conditioner out of my camper, and I had a good core left over in it. I've saved that core because one day I might be able to use it to either generate some heat or make a little homemade air conditioning system out of it.
You can't forget about renewable energy. That's wind. That's the water flowing, and like the compost. But basically, heating your house with the wood stove. That's one thing. And if you put a coil of copper inside the flue, it will get to boiling, and you can heat that water. You can make steam. You can do all that. But you got to make sure you're not going to keep up. It's not going to build up in pressure and blow. So you don't want that much volume in there.
If you got 10 or 15 kids in your family, put generators on your door because you know kids are always running in and out of doors all day long. You're always telling them either stay in or stay out. But either way, while they're running in and out, letting out the heat, at least supplement your electricity by pumping some of that back in. Every time they open that door, passes a coil of wire and puts a little charge back into the system. You know, every penny counts as far as I'm concerned.
Dress them in sweaters and put a little carpet on the steps running into the house. And
you know, they were doing some experimentation on piezoelectrics in the flooring of people's houses, so that whenever you're walking across the floor, just the vibration of you walking across the floor is actually generating electricity, right?
Yeah, and your pressure bending the crystal, one heck of a charge. That's a lot of weight.
Well,
just like when you go to scrub a floor, you can scrub it with your arm, or you can just put your foot on it and do the twist. You get, you're 250 pounds. That's a little bit more than you want to push with your arm. You can scrub that floor easy, and it don't take much. And you're walking. Walking really doesn't take all that much. But that's a lot of wasted energy on pressure on the floor if you don't use it.
Well, everything that we talked about so far is not beyond the realms of possibility. Everything is already there. All you got to do is gather up your parts and do it. And so in an apocalyptic scenario, if all you had around you is a bunch of junk that nobody was using anyway because they were fleeing town or whatever, heck, I'd be gathering up all the copper tubing and electrical wire that I could find. I'd have lights and heat and everything. I wouldn't be sweating the mess. I'd just be watching out for the zombies.
Yeah, I'd like to do a bandicraft with a prop. What was it? I was just thinking about the other generator. We just talked about it a minute ago. Wimshurst. Put a Wimshurst up there on a small prop and run that electricity down. If you can run a spark gap to the primary of a Tesla coil, just make a small spark gap so it makes AC and continuous. Imagine you can light some fluorescent lights easily with that, or charge cell phone by a transformer.
There's another key right there. The fluorescent bulbs are, you know, perfect. You know, if you can case those in like some sort of resin, they'd last forever, you know, and they'd still light up. But the Wimshurst idea, going back to that for a minute, I would like to see a multi-stage Wimshurst instead of one, set of wheels going in opposite direction. Maybe you have like 5 or 10 sets on the horizontal shaft with a wind turbine kind of deal, you know.
Yeah, the Windsurf doesn't use much mechanical force to turn it at all. And the thing is, you can run them wires down. You can have one heck of a capacitor bank down there to draw it off of there.
And all of it has energy potential, you know. Can you run your house off of static energy? Not direct, but yeah, you can, because the capacitor technology these days is mind-boggling. I mean, it's amazing. Like I said, I bought three 500K microfarad capacitors for $20 a piece, and I bought them at a thrift shop. And so, with that said, you know, there's a lot of energy potential in three 500K microfarad capacitors.
Yeah, the other thing is, when you build a wind turbine, man, you're going to spend of a decent size. Basically, you're going to spend a few hundred dollars on magnets. Well, you can't get magnets in the apocalyptic situation unless you bought them before.
Well, you can get them if you don't have to.
The Windsurf does not need magnets. It doesn't need coils.
Yeah.
You got some aluminum foil tape and some discs. Go for it, man.
Yeah. You can get magnets in the apocalyptic scenario if you know what kind of appliances they're in, and they're in a whole lot of them. But like you said, though, the Windsurf would be your best bet because, you know, it's a simple concept to pick up a static charge, and even the Van de Graaff, for that matter. You know, Van de Graaff's going to have a little bit more. It's going to take a little bit more mechanical engineering in order to get it, but you're still going to get a lot of high voltage out of that static charge. And so the best one to me would be the Van de Graaff idea. If you could make a multi-stage Van de Graaff and have it, either horizontal or vertical out there with a really decent wind turbine, and there's all kinds of different, like the helix blade and stuff like that, and different ones that are really super efficient in low winds, that you could even catch the slightest wind and still get a charge off of that thing. Shoot it across a spark gap like you were talking about, charge capacitor banks, and once them capacitor banks got charged up, man, you got power right there.
I've got a design on an air conditioning for the house that doesn't use any electricity whatsoever. It has a small VAWT on top, which basically is used only to pump the water to the top of the evaporative cooling pads. And the unit is a triangle, a clear triangle that comes off of your window. And it has a flapper inside that goes from one side over to the other side, depending on which way the wind is blowing. The wind might be blowing almost straight at your wall, at that wall of the house, but it's going to go to the left or to the right and up. It's not going to go down, so it's going to get some compression and speed up, and you're going to get a nice, it's like having a scoop out there that changes as the wind direction changes. As it accelerates down the house, all of a sudden the wind changes just a little bit. Next thing, it's going to go the other way, and that little flapper is going to move over, and it's going to be working off that cooling pad. And as long as you got a window open on the other side of the house, it'll get a full float from the input window to the output window and cool your air. Not 20 degrees, maybe 5 or 10, 15 if it's really windy.
But any improvement on efficiency is better than nothing at all. And so, you know, all the things that we've talked about here today, at the very least, would supplement the energy that you would need to run things that you normally have. So instead of me having to have a 10 kilowatt generator or something like that, you know, maybe I could do it on a smaller generator that would take less fuel and less energy to run, you know, because I'm using all these things in conjunction with each other. I don't need as many watts and amps to do what I'm doing, because I'm using supplementals such as solar and wind and hydroelectrics and thermoelectrics and the composting and all this stuff together. I build me a self-contained system that no matter what's happening, I'm getting electricity, even if it's something as simple as the kids flagging the kitchen door. You see what I'm saying?
It's not the electricity. It's you need heat, you need cool, you need to cook, you need to, it doesn't have to be electricity. That's the thing. All the different energies and stuff, the things that you can use, if you're up in the mountains away, away from the grid, yeah, it's nice to have a little bit of electricity to run your laptop if you need to study and figure or look at the plans on how to build something and, communicate on CB to people down the mountain or something.
That's why I said solving the heat issue would solve the energy issue, because the majority of the heat wasted in, or the energy wasted in your house is the heating portion of it, you know, or the cooling portion of it. And you've already mentioned a few different ways, like the evaporated cooling and, falling water. I mean, there's so many different ways that you could actually cool your house just as well as heat your house using a lot of things that are going on in nature, you know. If you're living in an area where it's, like, really hot, you can bury a 30-foot culvert pipe underneath the ground and blow air through that and get the equivalence of air conditioning on the other side. Now, is it going to be as cold as a regular air conditioner? No, but it's going to make enough difference to where you're not sitting there sweating to death.
Let's add this one. It's a pretty nifty deal. I know time's getting short. You dig a hole down into the ground 45, 50 feet, and you put two pipes, you go ahead and take two pipes side by side, you insulate one of them, and at the end you put two elbows, or you just curve it around to a U. Slide it down in that hole. One side's insulated, one side's not. If you fill that U with water, then the water's going to be level, so it's not going to take much to pump water down and back up. You only need an inch or two difference. Down in the salt mines, they had a hard time pulling all that salt up on the tracks, and if somebody slipped, here goes that car, it wants to go down and roll over people, and they had accidents. So somebody came up with a brilliant idea. Well, let's pump water down there and then pump the water after it dissolves the salt back up. And what they found is part of the way up, those lines started forming ice on them. These big pipes were getting ice built up on them because the pressure down there was heavier, and as it got up lighter, the water was basically they started freezing. So that was your beginning of air conditioning. That was one of your first air conditioners. So if it goes down into the ground and comes back up, one side's insulated, that's the cold side. The other side is bleeding the heat off into the ground as it goes down.
Yeah.
And then as it comes up, it's insulated to keep that cold. And with very little wattage, you can get freezing cold water from the ground.
Well, there you go.
And keep on recirculating the same thing. Run it through a little radiator fan and put some air through it to keep it from freezing.
And anybody who lives next to a natural spring, if you've ever went wading in a natural spring, you know that water is freezing cold, buddy. You put your cooling system down inside that water and just let the natural spring do what it does and circulate that water up through there. You got free cool air, free cold water right out of the gate.
That's right.
So, you know, since we're running down on time, we're down to the last 7 minutes of the show. It's been fascinating. We got so many different simple ideas out there. It's just going to be a case of, you know, before anything happens, such as the power grid going down, doing a little bit of researching and talking to some of these guys out here in the alternative energy community. And I keep saying this, that instead of going out there protesting, wasting your time, arguing with the government and all them individuals out there who don't really care about it because it's all about money, you know, we already have all the answers to make our houses super efficient energy-wise, but they're not doing it because it makes money, you know. You're going to sell oil, you're going to sell electricity, you're going to make a lot of money. They don't want you to know things like that. And all these ideas that we're talking about are simple ideas. You have access to the information, and don't put all your eggs in one basket. Just use all these things to supplement each other, and if the worst case scenario, you don't have to have as much energy from your generator to keep you comfortable. So with that said, what, you guys got any last things going on there?
Looks like Thomas dropped out, or the internet dropped out. Not much to say. Basically, type in Muddy Muddy Mudman on It'll lead you to YouTube and see my channel on how to build a lot of some of this stuff, and I hope to get into the rest of it there. I guess next is Sky.
Well, what you got there, Scott?
I like the I like this idea of composting for heat. It's very simple and it is extremely cheap, because once your unit is made, then that's it. Your cost is done. You know, all you're doing is just reactivating your compost to keep the heat going. So that's a wonderful idea. If you can heat your entire house out of it and devise a method to convert that heat into electricity, you've got your entire house's energy needs solved. So, you know, wonderful idea. I like it.
I've got something for you there. Type in permies.com, P-E-R-M-I-E-S, permies, it's permaculture, permies.com, and start searching around in there. You can learn a lot about the compost and basically all sorts of permaculture. And another one, if you're looking for something to eat during them apocalyptic times, or basically eattheweeds.com, you'll find out that a lot of the weeds are more nutritious than our regular vegetables.
Well, I believe you could heat your house. Now, would it be as hot as it would be if you had a really heavy-duty furnace? No, but heat does rise, and so if your floors are warm and the heat is rising, then it's going to be colder inside than it is outside. So all these things together, you know, by themselves may not be that impressive, but used in conjunction with each other, you could literally build a self-contained house that would use everything around you. And so with that said, I think that you
let me add one point. If you're using a wood stove, you're drawing air into your house, cold air.
Yeah. And
so if you're using like 160 degree something that's not sucking in cold air into your house, you're keeping that heat.
Yep. Well, anyway, I hope that everybody out there has enjoyed the show, and thanks to the guest for being on here. A lot of good discussion, a lot of good ideas and stuff like that that, you know, I hope everybody out there listening will benefit and give you some ideas. If it gets your brain a-ticking, then I'm happy. My job is done. That's what my mad science is all about. You know, it's about getting you out there thinking about other alternatives other than the way that the system is created right now. I mean, if you like your light bill, leave it the way it is. If you don't like your light bill, then start supplementing your lighting, even if it's something as simple as, you know, going down to energy saver bulbs or running some solar panels or some wind generators or whatever. There's so many different ideas that you could do to supplement your energy usage right now. And it could be as simple as unplugging things, and if you're not going to be using them, to not have them plugged in, you know. But the more money you save in the pocket, the more money you got to put towards your energy research, towards you know, any kind of worst case scenario where the power grid does go down and you don't have access to it. You solve the heating problem, you solve the energy problem, and I think that all the things we talked about today are proof positive that you can do just that. And so with that said, any last thought? We got like 2 minutes left there. Nope.
Not much. If you don't know how to do something, do a little reading on the web. Just look up the subject matter, or permies.com does a lot, or just look up green energy, renewable energy. Check my channel out. And if you're, you know, like I even show you how to take a 2x4, which cost about $2.76, and show you how to carve it into a prop by hand. And I mean, a lot of people I noticed are really scared to put a nick in the thing to start off because they're afraid they were going to mess it up.
Right.
The wind doesn't care how ugly your prop is. It's still going to turn. Just do it. Make mistakes. You learn better. You'll get hooked on them.
All right. Good work. Advice. Thanks, guys. Check it out. Anyway, stay tuned for the Hope Show. Peace and love, everybody. You've been listening to Shaziz Mad Science. Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.